Okay, get your fix with the Uncommoncast Rx, your cure for the Kamen Rider show. Join us as we discuss the bravest of all the fighters, and those Heisei guys too. With burning justice in our souls, let's tear it up.
Alright, this is Aleph.
And I'm Amit.
I'm Jonathan.
And this is Sono.
Today we're putting Drive to the test as speed as we can as we cover Drive Episode 2, What is a Kamen Rider? And we're just going to ask the question, what is a Kamen Rider? I'll run through the three questions actually that I got from this. First one is, how far is Shinosuke from being a Kamen Rider? Second one is, does a rider need a bike? And the third one is, what is the core of riderhood? So whoever wants to go first, take it.
Alright, well, I'll start because I'm full of myself. But for the first question, how far is Shinosuke from being a Kamen Rider? And in a lot of ways, he's not, really. I have some weird, hard-to-place issues that I'm going to discuss later, but the kid's out there fighting monsters and protecting people while wearing a helmet with some awesome headlight-patterned bug eyes that I am just really in love with. All the same, if they wanted to give him, like, a heroic trial, a trial of heroes, you might say, where he actively goes after the title.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, see, I'm pretty good. But yeah, if you want to actively go after the title of Kamen Rider and have achieving it be a part of the series, I sure wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I mean, he really doesn't seem that far off. He's kind of pretty much willing to go for it when the time for it comes.
I think it's interesting that they've kind of gone with this, like, almost apathy phase with him. I don't think I've ever seen that in a rider before. Even
what? Go ahead, Takumi.
Well, that's not apathy.
Takumi still just wanted to. He still wanted to, like, help people. He was.
Yeah.
He was just living in a world full of jerks.
All the spies. No, but I don't know. Like, it's more the kind of. It's more with the way that he's. I don't know, he's kind of like, until he gets going, he's in one place, and then he kind of ends up in this sort of, this like game time, and then he's on. Like, I've never really seen that in a rider before. They're always kind of like, there's always this kind of heroic edge to them, even if it's like with Ryotaro in Dano, where he like doesn't know how to do it, but he knows he wants to do it. Whereas this is a different take on that, I think.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to really want to be any kind of hero. He clearly wants to help people.
Yeah.
In the police way, and then if people are in danger, he's going to do something about it. But he doesn't really seem to have this desire to be kind of anything greater than what he is. And I think that kind of feeds into his whole, like, guilt trauma.
Yeah,
really think he should be.
And I find that interesting as an angle, because I think that's actually something that resonates with quite a few people. I think that's quite, you know, I think that's quite a good, interesting angle to take. But I don't know, in some ways, I just want to throw it out there. Were some people, like, kind of disappointed in the sense that his partner was still alive?
Yes.
I was going to say, okay, I'm glad that only I thought that. Oh, really? Okay.
I was not either.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's less disappointment to make sure I am not misunderstood.
Yeah.
it's that the... This is one of those things where I get into the exaggerations that are appropriate in various sorts of fiction. And the way that people react, because his reaction is very realistic. If I had accidentally blown off my friend's leg, I would probably also have a lot of really heavy guilt stuff going. But having the thing where he can just go and talk to his bro, it does undercut the idea that he's trying to, in his own mind, atone for a sin.
I kind of disagree, just as someone who has kind of dealt with that sort of issue. Being able to talk to that person and being told that they think it's okay doesn't always make you feel less bad about it.
This is a fair point.
Yeah. I think that was what I kind of. I don't know. I just thought it was somewhere. to have a Kamen Rider who's essentially a murderer, I did wonder if they were going to... I thought that was a bit of a heavy route to go down right from the outset, considering considering the tone of the series. I was a bit like, that's a bit jarring, but now they've kind of cleared that up. It was like, you know.
Okay, hold on. I got to stop you real fast.
Yeah, sorry.
I have a big problem with the confluence, I think is the proper word.
Conflation.
That would be a noun. Conflation? Okay, yeah. Conflation.
No, confluence is pretty correct. If I think you're going to say next what you are going to say. Moving on.
The blurring of the lines between murder and killing or manslaughter.
True. That's
and it's probably just from my biblical ecumenical studies that not ecumenical, but you know what I'm saying. A distinction that there has to be intent versus an accident, and it's still horrible and it's sad.
I think more it's how he would paint it in his head is probably more what I was thinking about. But I agree, he isn't a murderer. That's not what I was. Even if his friend had still been dead, I agree with you. I was just
right. But you know. I mean, you do raise a good point of how it feels to him, and I think that's something that Sona touched on too. I find it really interesting that he isn't this. He's kind of humble. But he's also kind of a slacker.
I was going to say, he's kind of a lot of things. Mixed with apathy, which is an interesting mix to have.
So maybe it's almost that he's withdrawn, and that's kind of why they keep saying stuff like he's revving up or he's starting his engine. Like, he's not being his full self because these things are stopping him, and they're manifesting in kind of weird ways, and like, I mean legitimately... odd ways.
It is. Yeah. A thing I noticed rewatching the first episode, he spends a lot of the first episode lying to himself. He keeps telling himself, I'm not going to think about this anymore. I'm going to move on. I'm not going to think about it. He's very clearly constantly thinking about it, and it's really holding him back from everything. Mm. No matter what he does, no matter what he's doing, until he's really more caught in... There's something I have to do. There's something I have to fight for. He really does get very, very held down by this one mistake that was not totally his fault, but he very clearly, as we see him kind of going back to it, he very openly blames himself. Even if the slowdown happened, I took this bad shot and I made this mistake and it's my fault.
I think what's really interesting also is it plays into that whole thing kind of plays into a theme of Kamen Rider, this kind of Jekyll and Hyde thing where like the withdrawal he feels is to kind of shield the world from this personality that he knows is effectively dangerous. And I wonder if that's going to be somewhere they're going to take it, because you see the same thing in, it's kind of like Gills in Agato sort of, where he's got this like power inside him, but it's so visceral and so kind of destructive that he's kind of shielding himself, and it's the same with Rider One, where he's so powerful, he damages things and that kind of thing. But in this, it's like he knows that his personality would lead him to take those more risky decisions, and so he becomes withdrawn towards protect other people in a way. And I wonder if they're going to go down that route. It was just something I thought was interesting about the way they're setting it up.
I certainly wouldn't mind if they did.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's really interesting, especially as a contrast to Shotaro, who is, Riku Sanjo's first Kamen Rider. And, I hated Shotaro. Like, I disliked him throughout the series, but he was kind of okay. And then at the end, like, episode 46 or so, where he, like, almost let Excel get murdered. Like, that's when I was done with him. Because if Excel went down, then the rest of the world would have been destroyed by the Gaia Impact or whatever. And... like, he totally chickened out in a way that I don't think is appropriate for a writer. I mean, yeah, I think a writer should have, the full range of human emotion, but...
Definitely, in, like, an episode 46 situation, he should definitely be, like, past that kind of thing by now.
Yeah, he's coming to the...
You would hope so. Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe that's why it bothered me so much, that he stayed half-boiled. And then, like, even in the Kamen Rider Tyson movie, he's still half-boiled, and, like, that's okay. And it's not okay... And I'm not saying you have to be hard-boiled, but, like, the difference between Shotaro and Shinosuke, which I'm really enjoying, is that Shinosuke has this kind of humility where he's, like, afraid of, like you were saying, Jonathan, I think you're accurate, that he's afraid of being his brash, like, bold, reckless self, whereas Shotaro, like, has this persona of a hard-boiled man that he wants to project. And so, like, one of them is making himself more than he is, and the other is making himself less than he is. He's restraining himself, like for the betterment of people around him. And that's really cool. And I like that about him. So my answer to the question is he's not that far from being a writer, and it'll be interesting to see his journey towards like claiming the mantle or
it
whatever.
Really will.
Even though yeah. that's
I think it's kind of yeah no it's I think it's kind of similar
is
to
it though?
Sorry, go on. Sorry, Alex, go on.
Go
no,
ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying it's not really that overblown. This is superhero fiction, and everything is overblown. Everything is, you know, it's drenched in metaphor. It's put through layers and layers of symbol. Like, him claiming that mantle is when he claims himself. I mean, that's that's when he becomes himself. That's how this works.
Yeah,
usually.
And I mean you can go on and on about that kind of thing. I mean, the whole idea of him being given the shift cards, which allows him to move through the slowdown, is basically the same thing as the metaphor of him being given the ability to look beyond himself and move on past his, you know, past the trauma he has and into becoming productive again. You know, it's all symbolism. It's all duality. It's all, you know, that kind of thing.
I think maybe I'm just a little gun shy from Gaim. You know,
understand.
Any talk of claiming anything is kind of off-putting to me in regards to a writer right now, because that's not what Kamen Rider is about, which is what we're going to get into pretty soon. Can we move on to the second question,
yes.
or,
yeah.
or do
Go
we want to make
yeah.
more? Okay. All right. So, does a writer need a bike?
Maybe.
I don't think so.
He just has to ride something. No one ever said it had to be a bike.
Okay, yeah, I feel totally the same way, and yeah. it's not because of Rider on the Car of Light from Black RX. Not at all. It has nothing to do with that, I swear. I'm being totally serious.
You and Black RX need to get a room somewhere. Like,
you know what? I wouldn't mind.
You could do worse.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know, if I ever get the chance, I'd love to. If I ever go to Tokyo or Japan, I want to go to Tokyo and have steak cooked by Tetsuro Kurata, because that would be just awesome. Anyway,
live the dream.
Any other comments before we go to the third question?
I think I was gonna say, like, when I saw the question, I was kind of like, I think that initially the series got a lot of like bad press for the not having a bike aspect, but I mean, as Sona said, I don't think the fact that it was a bike in the first season was kind of because that was cool, and you know, and it looked futuristic and stuff. But it, you know, it doesn't have to be. It could be a hover bike. It could be almost anything. I mean, in Deno, it was a train, and that worked really well. So,
didn't
you know,
Aqua have like some kind of jet ski?
Yeah, like a Sea-Doo or something. I think
that was great.
Conceptually, Ishinomori saw like a soldier in World War II riding a motorcycle, and he had a, you know, scarf on to protect his neck. From the biting cold or from chafing on the leather, and he was like, wow, that looks pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Aleph, did you have something you wanted to say more before we went on to the next question?
Well, you know, I was just saying that while I think bikes are cool and that they, at least to, you know, my Western perspective, carry with them a lot of connotations of freedom and speed, you know, let's just have... I like Rider as a title. Like, I know there are purists on this, but you know, it's a title. As long as he's masked and being... Because, I mean, here's the thing. In Sweden, the word for knight is ridare, or, you know, one who rides.
So, okay. That makes sense.
Because that being mounted kind of a... rather than being, you know, being... Well, not being mounted, being on a mounted steed.
Although that's nice, too.
You are a terrible person. You and Black RX, yeah, just go away.
Like... Hey, I am a father, okay? I know what I'm talking about.
Welcome to the late night version of Uncovered Cast RX, where we talk about
RX sites.
I'm just glad the car is actually like important. The bike has meant almost nothing the past couple of years.
Yeah.
So I mean, what's more important, the bike or what he's riding actually being part of who he is?
Mm. I mean, that was the thing in Gaim, like the Rose Hoppers, is that one? No, the Rose Hoppers, Tulip Hoppers.
It was the Rose Attacker and the...
Well, exactly. There's my point. I don't even know what it's called. Like,
right,
because
it didn't matter.
Exactly. That pretty much says everything. Whereas, like, with the Typhoon, you knew exactly what that was. And it was
excuse me, Cyclone.
Cyclone, sorry.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to, like, rider snob all over you.
Actually...
I think you're all fine.
We're having fun tonight.
Yeah, as soon as we haven't talked to each other for ages, we're just kind of back in, you know. All the, anyway.
And I did just down a beer, so. Anyway. More to add do you have, or should we move on to the third question?
Move along.
Alrighty. So what is the core of writerhood?
It's again, this question kind of brought me back to a scene in Forza, and maybe it's because I was talking about this scene yesterday, when Tomoko confronts Meteor. She sets up kind of a pretty good framework for what Ryder is supposed to be in this era, because she just walks out to him and declares, "Kamen Riders uphold justice." It's like, you're supposed to be a hero, you're supposed to protect people, and Meteor kind of brought into question, well, your justice is different than mine, but she makes it very clear kind of what we're supposed to see a Rider as, kind of in present era Kamen Rider.
Oh, I would totally agree with that. Anybody else want to weigh in? Because I'll sit back and wait.
Oh, I've got a world of thoughts. Do you want to go first, Jonathan, or?
I agree with Sono. I think there's a lot to be said for that scene, kind of defining, kind of a lot of the essence of being a writer. I think, for me at least, one of the thing that typifies Kamen Rider for me is something that I talked to Claire about once, which was basically about how it kind of embodies this spirit of people who've gone through terrible things, but they take that experience and the power it gives them, and they use that to strive to become better people in themselves. I think maybe perhaps more so in Showa and early Heisei, but I think that's something. There's something about that. It's taking the experiences that you've had, be they good or bad, and using them to transform the world around you through the power you have, because that's the right thing to do. And I think that's one of the things that really gets to the core of Rider for me.
Oh, and I, yeah.
Well said.
I'm right there. Yeah, I agree. Applause. You see, me, I just take it like a slight step to one side, because it's about the same thing, but like I feel like a big part of Rider is that the Rider themselves should be kind of a social outsider, be it because of their damned cursed body, or because they're weird guys wearing pompadours and bizarre school uniforms when everyone else has actually got one that's kind of cool. But they use that outsider status, which is created by the system which they will go on to fight, to make positive changes in the world. I mean, it's not even about gaining acceptance from that society. It's like you were saying, Jonathan, it's about finding what's right and doing it, because the extant structures of that society which you're helping cannot, either because the problem is too big or because they're invested in the problematic system itself, i.e., if you want to blame someone, blame the government you elected, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Which actually brings me to my one weird, perhaps way too personal issue with Drive, which is, just on a conceptual level, which is that I get a little hinky around the idea of this character who I have just described now being a cop. Like, there's something weird to me about having the rebel quasi-outsider superhero existing inside the framework of working for the man, being a part of the authority system.
Isn't the first time we've had that. This isn't even really close to the first time we've had
that. I was
going to
say, we had G3.
It's the first time we've had... Yeah, but G3 isn't... Is the show called Kamen Rider G3?
No, it's not.
He's a representative of the civil authority, but he's not the main character, and his conflict is not the main conflict of the show.
No, okay, true.
His conflict is to find the authority and, with the rest of the writers in the series, rebel against it.
But you can... I'm going to propose something that I don't know if this is going to happen, but...
No,
knowing cop dramas, this it may come to this in a way. From the inside, it's much easier to take a look at what's wrong with cops.
Yeah, look, if we go there, I will shut my mouth. Because I'm just saying, this is a weird thing on a conceptual level, and I know we're only two episodes in.
Well, no, I was going to slightly agree with you, but then from the way they've set it up, the disconnect between his Rider activities and him being a cop is enormous. Because as far as it's made aware to us, the rest of the team, apart from Kiriko, don't know about Drive. They don't know that they don't know Shinosuke's Drive. They don't know it exists. It's not like the police built the system and they're now using it. It's more like he's a Rider who just happens to be a cop. And so I guess there's more of a disconnect there in my head anyway.
No, and it exists there for me because that's why I can continue watching the show without the hinky sort of weird, hard to place feeling taking over. But there is just this thing to me of, okay, so now we've got a lone cop with the power of a Kamen Rider. And yes, he's got a good heart, but, you know, lone vigilante cops are not things which, classically and historically speaking, have been really good for the communities they serve.
No, yeah, that's true. Oh, sorry, go on, Sonny, go on.
I kind of want to, again, step back toward kind of the last cop that we had, who was not a rider, but probably should have been, Rinko, back in Wizard. I was part of the camp really hoping they'd G3 her.
Now, look, I think Rinko, though, it's a different thing, because, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm talking over you.
Well, no, because there was a lot of kind of implied corruption within the police that ended up not being corruption and ended up being kind of a weird side plot line that didn't go anywhere. But there was kind of this weird implication in the beginning, the police know about the Phantoms, they know about all of this, and they're blatantly and purposefully ignoring it. And she was like, that's dumb. We're police. We have to help people. We are going to help people as police. And how that was handled up until kind of the weird, I don't remember his name because I just keep calling him Long because that's who he was in Geki Ranger.
NSA Special Agent Kazaki.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. Until that kind of turned into a weird plot line for him that ended up establishing more about Section Zero that didn't do anything. I thought it was a kind of a very interesting route to take with that. And I'd like to see them again kind of bring our B-cast into Team Drive and kind of really go into exposing that, because that's, again, a really common police drama trope.
It is.
Mm. Yeah, I think it could be a really interesting lens through which to explore things. Yeah, I would agree.
It is. I just, and again, like, this is just a weird sort of gut level, hard to really unpack issue for me that could just be entirely personal. It's weird having a writer who's a cop, like a sub, you know, side characters. They don't have power, and a lot of them, like Rinko, are outsiders inside of this system in a way that this dude isn't. I mean,
I don't know though, because the special crimes unit just seems to be like. It's, I mean, just to go off topic for 2 seconds, but it will make a lot of sense. Can somebody answer me this question? The Special Crimes Unit, are they inside the equivalent of, like, the DMV?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
They are.
Okay, I'm great, okay. Oh. I'm glad that I got that right, because I watched it and I was like, I don't think I'm right, but anyway. So, they are, like, a splinter group of the police anyway, and they seem fairly autonomous, from what I can tell. So I don't know if they're kind of going like to this halfway house where he's a cop, where it's like, well, he is, but this is a kind of, you know, this group can kind of make their own rules because no one cares. Like, I wonder if that's the route they're going down. But
it does seem that way. But again, and this is one of those things where I have very particular personal definitions and interests in the way I view things, which is a common theme I've noticed among this particular group. But I keep seeing, you know, he's a cop. He is a representative of that civil authority, and having the representative of civil authority take on superpowers to go exact vigilante justice, even as I say, you know, the justice that Kamen Riders put out is generally pro-social. It's weird. It's like, because, like, again, like Rinko, she was kind of outside the normal cops just because she's a lady, and that always seemed to be a thing that they were just like 2 seconds away from actually discussing in a meaningful way, but they can't because, you know, kids show Toei.
Yeah.
But again, this,
I mean,
this
they
is just...
they did occasionally early on call it out with, like, her actual boss being super sexist, and several other lady cops being like, "Wow, you're gross."
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just, again, I look forward to seeing how it works out, but it's just something I am going to... It's an issue I'm going to be having going into the series.
I think you're right. I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out as the series goes on. As you say, we've only had two episodes, and I think there's probably a lot more to come in that vein or not. We'll see. Yeah.
I admit it could all go horribly, horribly wrong.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I want to have faith just after the past year that they're not going to go... They're not going to go wrong. They're going to do right by this.
Well, it's a small digression on my part. I'm very sorry. I'm dominating this whole bit. I'm very sorry.
But, follow your dreams.
I'm going to try. But it's one of those things, though, where the more frustrating thing for me is when there's a thing that's competently done but is not good, than a thing that is incompetently done that is not good. Because after a while, Gaim was kind of just a joke, right? I mean, we were all just there.
And
saying,
I mean, I feel you. Like, I'm still angry about GoBusters because the last five episodes were way better than they had any right to be.
Mm.
They were amazing, and then I look at like the five episodes before that, and just what were you thinking? This show could have been great.
Oh yeah,
but
definitely.
Executive meddling.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm forever angry about that, and I'm really hoping that this doesn't turn out that way. And I want to believe.
No, absolutely, because I'm dedicating a goodly chunk of my week, of my year to this thing. I want it to not be terrible.
No, that's true. Although, on another digression, but not one that's actually... Anyway, on a digression somewhat, Do people think this show is having trouble picking a tone?
Not really.
Okay.
It feels very much the post-decade Heisei tone.
Okay. Right. I wouldn't know how to define that as such. Because I don't know. The one thing I've thought is this show kind of... It seems to kind of stumble between comedy and very serious bits and not really know which one it wants to do. And it kind of... I don't know. I just think it's... To me, it seems that it's having trouble deciding, but it is episode two, and I think perhaps as it goes on, it will kind of find itself a bit more as you get into the characters a bit more.
Yeah, I think it's because a lot of the backstory is very, very heavy, and we're still being introduced to that through the present, which they're presenting a lot more with a lot more lightheartedness. So I think kind of once we get kind of all of that really heavy introduction settled, I think maybe it will be a lot easier and won't have kind of the tonal disconnect of maybe Jonoichi's entire character.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of my bar of not being able to pick a tone, is just the first 24 episodes of him.
I was going to say, it feels almost as if Begins Night is happening interspliced with all the first few episodes. Like, we're going to get, instead of having Begins Night be in a movie, and that's from Double, for those who don't know, it's going to be occurring in little fragments, like what we saw at the beginning of the episode, maybe for the first 10 or 15 episodes, as we learn more and more, and then finally, you know, Mach will come in and blah, blah, blah.
Whatever.
I'm not sure if I like
that. Yeah, I'm still upset about that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I don't know. It could... I just hope that they don't do that at the expense of the characters in the central show itself. I don't know. Like, I don't...
As often happens.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think we'll get to the point about the B team later on, but like, yeah, there's problems there that need to be addressed reasonably soon, but then I still give it a bit of a pass because it's only episode two, so...
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of...
Again, like, I'm really hoping that settling the backstory doesn't take 15 episodes. I'll give it, like, maybe 5 at most. Mm. I think by then it should kind of all... Everything that we really need to know about the past should probably be settled.
Yeah. Yes. Or if it's going to... I don't mind if the past was a mystery to be solved in the present, then...
No, I'm sorry. Really? No more mysteries, but go ahead, say your piece. But no more
mysteries. They're not really treating it as something that needs to be solved in the present, though. It's not anything being investigated. It's just information that we're being handed.
No, exactly. No, that's my point, but I'm saying if they were doing it as a, you know...
But that would be
investigating
different.
It, that would be different. Yeah, I agree. But that's what I would think. But I could do without the mystery, maybe, yeah, but I think, I don't know, I just think they're going to, like, they're going to eke it out, and it's probably going to be, I don't know, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to happen later rather than sooner, which is probably not good in this case. I don't know. But who knows? They could do completely, something completely different. Because, I mean, we have competent writers on this season, so, you know, hopefully we'll get
something. Yeah, yeah, and as much criticism as I give him, I think Rusanja is pretty competent. The thing with me and mystery is it's too much. We need to stop. Not everything has to be a mystery. Some things it's okay to know them. Or, like, I'm happy, I'm pretty content that we're being handed this information. Although, again, like my complaint with Begins Night, I wish we were getting that stuff,
In the show
first. Like, do it in order. Like, be bold. Don't start with some 20-year-old or 20-something being the Kamen Rider. Have it be, you know, Japanese Tony Stark at first.
Well,
and then
Begins Night was only, like, 6 months before the show started.
Well, but here's the thing. It's the same writer, and he's still doing this crazy incident that happens 6 months before the show.
I mean, I'd be willing for, like, the entire first, like, two episodes to have been Begins Night to set everything up. I'm just saying, it's like, it's... There's not a huge, like, disconnect in the time between Begins Night and the beginning of the show. Yeah. It just seems that way because of Shotaro's tiny pants.
But,
yeah. I'm really not over his pants. That's like that's a huge gripe of mine that Narmi would let Shotaro out in public like that.
That's a good point.
Maybe he's an AC/DC fan.
Maybe. I mean, that's obviously to, you know, show that he's just a boy or whatever at the beginning.
Then make a bigger disconnect of time.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot about Double today. And all kinds of issues that I'm not even sure I knew I had with this show until I started having this thought process.
I'm sorry, it's a bad show.
It's not a bad show, it's just a lot of poor choices were made.
I would agree with that, yes.
You know,
a lot of poor choices were made and all the writers should have been girls.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been cool. No, I think one of the interesting things about kind of the way, I don't know, I've noticed this a lot, that like the way that they seem to do first episodes is very different from any kind of Western show I've ever watched. I don't know what it is, but they seem to be like, it's basically like kind of a race to get as many things on the screen as you possibly can in 25 minutes.
Yes.
And whereas like a lot of like the British and American shows I watch, it's like do a two-parter with an event in it, but you've got to have some character investment. And I think there's kind of, it's like gone too far one way. So like the first episode, like I watched the first episode with my friend who's not really into Kamen Rider that much, but we watched it together and we were laughing about it kind of stuff. But it got to the end and he was like, who's this? Who's that? Why are they doing this? And I was like, well, yeah, I have all those questions too, but I'm kind of used to it. So I don't know if I get like, you know, desensitized in some respect, but I think it's interesting that that's kind of a storytelling trope or a storytelling device or something like that. I don't know, is that a very Japanese thing or is that just a kind of a Kamen Rider thing or just these particular
writers? I think at this
point
it's very much kind of a tokusatsu thing where they're just trying to make everything as right now at the point that we're at with shows, they're trying to make everything as big as possible, as quick as possible.
Right.
Because I think a lot of older shows start off much, much slower, at least with handing us information.
Yeah. I mean, O-Range is kind of like that. That takes like two episodes before they all even Henshin. Like you only get O-Red, who Henshins in the first episode, and he's kick-ass. But you know, like that's beside the point. But yeah, like O-Range is an awful lot. Like it seems like a lot slower to start, but it's a really good show. And even it doesn't seem to want to have to like get up to 500 miles an hour as fast as humanly possible, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I don't think you just got to be a lot more careful when you're doing that because you have to make sure that you're not neglecting characters at the extent of, to the extent that I think has happened in certain series. But
it is kind of happening now again with the B cast, and I mean we'll kind of get to that. But like that is my one big concern is that we're going to be kind of, and again I think this is mostly Forze's fault with Shun. I'm kind of afraid that some of our B-cast is just kind of going to kind of remain these hollow tropes and not really become anything. Because we're too busy with all of this other information, but also we have characters that we don't need.
Yeah. But I mean, even like our main cat, even like Kiriko, like there's not, like, she is cool and she is great, but there's not really much, there's not really been a lot explained about her or even focused on her very much.
Which I think is going... The title of next episode kind of implies that we're going to get more about her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, totally.
So I'm kind of hoping that clears that up.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Because I think she's got potential to be awesome, but, like, you know, it's kind of... It comes down to, like... Yeah, it's going to come down to how well they handle her character in the sense of, like... In the sense of whether they actually give her stuff to do. Like, I don't know whether I like the whole thing about how she, like, just wouldn't be dry, but I'm hoping they have a decent explanation for why that is.
Yeah, I really... I need an explanation outside of, I would if I could. Because that's really leading down some old roads that I don't want to be on.
I would... Thinking about it, from what I've said about the way that Shinosuke's been set up, I would love it if it was that she was worried about a very similar thing in terms of, like, revealing... Like, she was really sundry and cold because she was worried about, like, revealing too much of passion would lead to danger for someone, for her or other people. I think that would be an interesting way to go. Whether that would depower her or not, I don't know. But it would be an interesting duality between the two.
It would be, and I think they may kind of be leading towards something like that, just kind of with the vibes I'm getting from her and kind of what I'm used to from women in Kamen Rider... How excited she got at the mention of Kamen Rider.
Mm.
But I really need something more than I would be Drive if it was possible for me to be Drive. Though I do like
if
that
Toei executives would just freaking let me.
Yeah, I do like that. Like, our writer himself is like, you know what? You'd probably be better at this than me. Why are you not doing this? Where he's like, hey, you could be a writer and would probably really be good at it.
Mm.
And I do like that she's not kind of exhibiting any, like, real anger at him being Drive.
Yeah.
Where she seems to, like, she would want to be Drive, but she's not angry that it's not her and instead it's him.
But, I mean, with the whole thing of, like, her notebook in the last episode, are we being set up for some kind of... Is this a love story or is this, like... I hope not, but...
I really hope it's not a blatant one. I'm willing to personally enjoy the idea of it. But with...
Yay for shipping.
Don't... That's a really bad road to start walking me down. I would love to see, again, me and Bokenger, I would love to see things kind of take more the route, if it has to be some kind of love story, is take more the route of Akashi and Sakura, where it wasn't a thing. For most of my first watch of that show, I wasn't sure. I'm like, am I watching these two with shipping goggles, or is there actually something going on here?
Mm.
And there was. And upon re-examination, I really love how Aikawa Show handled the two of them, and how it was never something that defined either of them, but was a big part of their story.
Mm. Yeah,
it was a big part of their story, but it wasn't their story.
Yeah, I'd hope they'd go over something more understated. I think that's what I just think the whole kind of, like, you know, becomes the hero gets the girl thing is kind of, it's been done.
Creepy as hell.
Yeah.
A little bit.
You know, the thing with them, the thing with them is that I think that they're going for, like, a weird like a really weird parallel between them and Heart and Brain, which is pretty bizarre. And I wonder,
so he's the brain, she's the heart? Is that
I think it'd be the other way around.
Yeah, the other way around.
See, I actually took that her and Belt were Heart and Brain, because Heart and Brain both got together and got some sucker to put on a Kamen Rider helmet and go do their dirty work.
That's a good point.
I'm not saying it's a one-to-one, but...
No, that's a good point, though.
It's an interesting angle to take, which, again, kind of leads back to his whole... leading back to Double, where, you know, Shroud had her son and some other guy, and Ryube had Seiko and Wakana.
Right.
He seems to like to play on that sort of duality.
Well, I always think it's a good idea, because if nothing else, it always gives you a good villain cast, and one thing I've learned from watching a lot of Sentai is that if the heroes can't be freaking amazing, I had best get some internal villain politics.
That was the best
part of Double for me.
Again, that was the best part of Double for me, too. I'm very, very invested in the Sonozaki family and not so much everything else.
Are we generally sold on the villain cast so far from what we've seen?
I'm not.
Really?
So far, it's just like, okay, still, you're still just three hot guys. I'm completely open to my opinion changing, but I really don't know what they're doing, what they want, or what is interesting about them.
Yeah. I think this was another thing that I found quite odd, was that this kind of tonal disconnect, because they seem quite whimsical, whereas actually, like, what they're doing is pretty evil. And I'm like, I don't think...
Well, they're bad guys.
but they're not Malshina. They're not comedy bad guys. It's not like
Malshina is the most serious threat.
Malshina was very serious about what she was up to.
In pre-release
stuff, weren't we comparing them a lot to Enter?
Enter
was very goofy and whimsical and wanted to completely destroy the Earth.
But it was always that kind of like playfulness with the kind of heel face turn, total evil, and it worked really well because he seemed totally invested in it. Whereas like it was just the scene where in the slowdown they were just walking serenely across that bridge in monster form, and I was like, this is quite funny, but you're not selling the idea that these guys are threatening. Whereas when they were sitting in the cafe in human form, that to me seemed like they were trying to set up this threat level. And I was like,
sorry.
Again, I'm really not that interested in them yet. They have, as of yet, to me, they're not more than we're three evil hot guys doing the evil toku hot guy thing. And I need more than that.
No, I completely agree. I just wondered how you were perceiving them thus far, because I wanted to know if I was just being like far too kind of expecting too much of it yet, or if, you know, I just wanted to see where
again,
where
I'm,
were.
I'm completely in the Super Sentai boat of, you give me an interesting villain team and I'm completely on board for your show. Mm. I may also just be kind of jaded in that I've been waiting for another good, like, human body female villain in Super Sentai, and I may be taking that out on Kamen Rider this year because we have no female villain.
It's been
this
a while.
Year? No, not in Kamen Rider. In Super Sentai, yes. It's been since Kegalesia, if we're going to count Escape at all, which I have a hard time doing because they wasted her.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said about Escape, unfortunately.
I could do an entire show on Escape, probably. And what could have been done and what wasn't. But I it's entirely possible that I'm kind of taking that disappointment out on Kamen Rider this year just because there's no female villain at all, where I'm kind of used to having one around in Kamen Rider.
Right. That makes sense. I'm not thrilled about them, but I'm not looking at them yet. And as interesting as the Sonozakis were, I wasn't that engaged by them, so I hope that he does something different this time. But I would like to say something about Sanjo and, you know, Sixth Rangers and Secondary Riders, I'm sorry. If Mach is gonna end up being, you know, Chase, that would make sense, because he'll be kind of repeating the thing from Kyoryuger, which I would not be surprised about. At all.
I don't want to repeat anything from Kyoryuger. That show wasn't good.
No, but it was amazing. Didn't you see I stopped after the Christmas episode, I think. So I don't know either.
I stopped halfway through, and then I marathoned it when it ended. And again, there are a lot of things I like about the show. There are a lot of individual episodes I like. Nasan is too good for that show.
He is
too good of a character to have been in that show, but I really there were so many stumbling blocks, and all of them were Daigo.
Well, Daigo is the Ubermensch, so I'm not surprised that he was the one stumbling block that ruined everything.
I really wanted is because the B cast is terrible and we need to fix them.
Okay.
We need to fix them immediately. Rina's still great. Rina, go on as they are. It's those other three guys.
Yeah, because like, what are they? What are they for?
They're the rest of the police unit. Except they're not interesting. I don't know anyone's name.
Yeah, no, this is my point. I don't mean in the terms of like, you know, what is their job. I mean literally, what are they for? They've not even been out of the office yet, any of them, or so it seems.
No.
For the second episode, they were out and investigated and stuff.
Oto's always been out. I don't even know if he's even actually part of this unit or just keeps talking to them for some reason.
He's their liaison,
isn't he? That's like, but the thing is, that this felt like episode 12 of Forze, except the number is important because you've had 12 episodes with this cast to kind of know their names and what they do, and that felt like a culmination of something, whereas this just felt like kind of far too soon, and you didn't really appreciate each person doing their part because there wasn't a character to hang that on. It was just sort of, as you say, just empty tropes.
Did we really even get? I can't even remember how much of them doing their part we got. Did we actually see them?
It was about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. Like this needs to stop. We need to. And this is, again, I want everyone to become part of Team Drive, where we kind of get them actually working with him as a rider, and where we get him kind of G3ing or doing the whole like Ichijo and Okita thing.
Yeah. Maybe it's going to be like him bringing them into the Drive Cave or whatever name it has. I can't remember. It's going to be like bringing them into his world, maybe? I don't know.
No, see, because like from the pre-release material, they're not supposed to know, and I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be the case for a long time, if not for the entire series.
Oh.
I really hope not. I'm really, like, I'm fine with them not knowing right now, as long as they're kind of more brought into it and... Because there can't be this complete disconnect between him being Drive and him doing police work when his police work is him being Drive.
Yeah. Right, especially because I pointed this out in the notes that I put further down. I'm pretty sure that like chunk of the passenger side of the car that comes out is his armor.
Yeah, no, I noticed that too, and I thought that was really cool.
That explains so much of why that happened.
It's really cool, but it like also kind of screws with things, like you're pointing out. You can't quite have that dynamic of them not knowing he's Drive when it's so obvious.
When it's his car. Again, Shotaro parks his bike outside the agency.
Yeah, he does.
You can't do that. You can't have this be a secret when it's not a secret.
Apparently you can if you're Riku Sanjo, though, because he's done it twice now. I'm sorry. I don't mean to beat up on the guy, but it's...
No, it is a problem. And, again, I'm okay with them not knowing right now. But they need to find out, and they need to be part of it. This needs to be a thing, because otherwise this story isn't going to hold.
Mm. Yeah, I can accept that.
No, I quite agree.
So I'm going to go ahead and step out and let the rest of the gang finish up because they're more than competent to do it, and they know my secret identity, so kind of screwed there. So I guess that's it for now. I will welcome your emails and tweets and comments, and talk to you next time. Bye.
Now Amit stepped out. We're going to talk a bit more about kind of some backstory elements, sort of, that we've kind of brought up. So we had this opening section where it's kind of revealed that at least Hart is somewhat involved with someone who might potentially be Mr. Belds. And then as the show kind of calls out that perhaps the shift cars and the Roy Mudes?
Number guys.
The number guys are potentially connected and possibly use the same power source, which I thought was... I kind of perhaps guessed that might be something that's important, but I think it's a good angle. I mean, what are you guys kind of thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm really glad that we're kind of calling that out in episode two.
Yeah.
Because this is kind of a story where it's not, it shouldn't be very obvious that they're connected. So kind of calling out that they might, such as in O's where it's like, okay, yeah, well, we have Ankh. This is all very definitely connected to the Greed. Or Wizard, where these phantoms came from the same thing that happened to Haruto.
Yeah.
So I kind of like Tamara being like, hey, you're this weird thing that is going on to fight these things. How are you all connected?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of really an important thing for them to have been calling out so soon.
Yeah, well, you know, why have a mystery? It's like Amit was saying, why even bother? Because here's the thing, that's what Kamen Rider is.
Mm.
Like, Rider 1 is a shocker kaijin who just said, never mind.
Yeah, and I actually, like, thinking about this, I went back and I'm like, oh, this isn't really something, this has only kind of been common in post-Decade Heisei, and then I'm thinking back on it, No, it's not.
There are actually
very, very few series where they're not connected in that way. The only one that I could think of offhand was Blade, where the power does still... Kabuto was one of them.
Kabuto was a bit, because
the thing is, it's like, because often in Sentai, the response is reactionary. So, like, the Earth is attacked or is going threatened with attack, and so somebody builds a team to fight them.
Yeah.
Whereas in Kamen Rider, it's often like...
One thing kind of affects the other.
Yeah, or or they're symbiotic, or somebody kind of turns the power for good in some way or other.
Yeah.
So often it's a different way of looking at gaining
Kind of Blade where the cards are, but the belts themselves were built outside of the battle fight. So really, Blade, Kabuto, and Hibiki.
I would take some slight issue with Blade, because I mean the monsters themselves are the source of the cards.
Again, well, yes, I said the belts themselves were the actual rider belt. What makes them a rider was built outside of the battle fight.
I can tell that's an aesthetic thing. So we're just gonna. I'm not gonna get into a fight.
Yeah, I think it's more.
I mean, once you get into context, it's a little more connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would say that
it's more almost looking at the reason for their construction almost, because like in Kabuto, they're created to fight the worm. That's the point. Whereas like in Forze, they're just utilizing the same power that the others are using through a belt, and so it's they're basically the same. It's just a case of how the power manifests in some respects.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good, it's a really interesting, as you say, it's good that they're bringing it up to not bother having the mystery, but I think it's, because one of the things I kind of called out quite early on was like, oh, this, the fact that they all appear on the same night is kind of all very, very, very similar, but then, I don't know, but then there is the whole kind of mystery surrounding Mr. Belt and what actually happened that I guess will hopefully be, I don't know, is it mystery? It kind of seems...
It's not so much a mystery what happened, it's just sort of a mystery as to who is that guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, we do have a really dumb name, but I don't remember what it is offhand.
Yeah.
Because it's dumb and has the word belt in it.
Which is resonating
anger from Gaim.
With
Sengoku. That was stupid. That was stupid, lazy writing.
See, I have a particular love for that particular kind of stupid, lazy writing. Because
I'm more okay with it here.
Gloriously dumb.
I'm more okay with it here because his name is like Beltstein or something. Whereas that's hilarious. Where in Gaim it's like Sengoku. The word Sengoku has a particular connotation that makes complete sense with what we've set up, but no, it's actually just because that's my name.
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with anything.
No.
Like, that was stupid and lazy.
Yes, well, that's Gaim.
In a nutshell.
whereas here it's actually just kind of ridiculous and comical.
Yeah. I mean, I do the idea of the belt being more of a character than in the past is quite cool. I think that's something that...
It's something they've kind of been building towards, because, I mean, a lot of people have, you know, there's the meme that goes around, like, God, belt, shut up! It's like, you know what? Let's not have the belt make sounds, let's just have it talk. Mm. Let's have it make snarky remarks to the protagonist about things.
Which is great, I'm glad Kivat is back.
Mm. Yeah, exactly, let's try it.
It's true. Although, I don't know, because, like, I don't like the idea the shift cars just kind of appear. I mean, so, no, I don't mean like I don't mean that they appear on the battlefield. I mean like new ones just seem to pop up for no reason.
Yeah,
well, there seems to be a community of them that just exists outside. It's
yeah, like I think they all exist somewhere, kind of in the Forza way of they had all the switches.
Yeah,
where like maybe some of them are not completely ready to be used, or maybe it's just. We don't know how many of these we can trust him to use at one time without him doing something dumb. Because he only
has four slots on the holster thing.
No, there's only three of them. And then Kiriko has her own holster.
And roll around and appear out of nowhere then, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, technically we have six slots. He has three and Kiriko has her own three.
Mm. And then there's a few more in the car.
Yes. So, I mean, who knows how many we're going to get total?
Yeah.
Probably a lot, so they can sell us a lot of tiny cars. That's what I'm assuming.
I was just happy that one of them was a taxi cab. I have this weird love for bright yellow taxi cabs. I can't even explain it.
I'd really hope that one of them was like a red Routemaster bus, but I don't think that's gonna really work. So.
That would be amazing.
It would
though.
Be cool, like famous cars of the world. Like you want to be like a Beetle and a Mini. And it'd be like...
That would be pretty fun. That they all do seem to kind of be holding one shape.
Yeah.
The evil car, the one that like flew into the office and like surfed the internet for whatever.
It's only found 4chan.
What's that? Yeah, probably. That one looked to me a lot like the Tim Burton Batmobile.
Oh, it did, yeah, that's the point, yeah.
Like, yeah, they should just all be famous cars. One could be the DeLorean.
That would be awesome.
And they are kind of shaped that way. You could totally do a DeLorean with one of these.
You could.
If there's some kind of, like, time travel car, I hope to God there's some kind of homage to the DeLorean.
Oh,
look,
yeah.
All I'm saying is, you know, the custom community is going to be on that.
Oh,
mess.
Yes.
If they do Adam West 1960s Batmobile, I will be happy forever.
That's like, that's the only Batmobile that matters. The only Batman that matters is Adam West.
Totally.
That's so true.
They're releasing all on Blu-ray, incidentally, but anyway, the movie is completely off topic.
I only acknowledge one live-action Batman, and it's Adam West.
Oh, dear. But anyway, moving back to the topic, because I think we're better, the sooner the better. I'm trying to think if there was anything kind of more that really jumped out in the episodes. I mean, like, there's lots of kind of plot hooks, or I'm hoping things that they kind of go with.
Well, speaking of plot hooks, if I may.
Yeah, of course.
I have one big question about the creation of the new bodies, because as we learned this episode,
the monsters
are creating their human forms, or at least that monster was creating his human form, or her, because, you know, pretty clearly gender fluid. I'm down with that.
Yes.
But, you know, they create gestalt bodies for themselves out of images or copies or parts of other people, and I'm just wondering, is that going to be the rule going forward? Is that the implication we're getting, or should I have been reading it more that this is his crazy serial killer rules, and now they're going to have to go through and find all of the... That's going to be the mystery that propels each individual episode or series of episodes going forward.
I think we're really going to kind of have to see another one of the number monsters do things before we can really determine. Because we didn't really get any indication of how Heart and Brain got human forms.
No.
So, I mean, they could have taken them from one person, they could have just made them up.
Yeah, true, yeah.
Because
they are kind of incongruous, like the human forms. They don't really seem to like. Then it's like kind in Harry Potter when they describe kind of wizards trying to dress up as muggles and not really getting it right. And it's like you've got the human form, but the clothes are not what you would expect a normal person to wear. I mean, I like them. I think they're cool clothes. Like, you know, they're definitely fashionable, but like it's just kind of like not quite right. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's very again. Very Kuga and very Kabuto.
Definitely, yeah.
In kind of picking out human forms, kind of running around pretending to be human as best we can.
Yeah.
I think we're going to kind of have to see more before we can really determine sort of what they're up to, or if this was a one-time thing.
Mm. Yeah, it's just, they introduce me to a rule set. Look, I'm engaged enough that I'm curious.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I thought was interesting was I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like it kind of seemed to me that like the monsters were like acquire. It was almost like, let's acquire data and evolve on the back of that. And I was like, hey, is this Digimon? Like, you know, that was my kind of vibe. I was like, is that what this is about? Like, is it because when it was scanning through all the different people, I got the impression it was trying to like acquire. I don't know. It was like acquiring. It was acquiring traits, obviously, but it was all like. But then it evolved its monster form based on the things it had gathered. And so I was kind of like, is this the route we're going down? Because I know there was a lot of talk in the pre-release stuff about kind of an internet vibe, and that hasn't really happened at all as yet.
Which, again, is why we kept going back to GoBusters, and that's, again, very, very much enter and escape, gathering data to try and figure out humans to then pass that on to Messiah for some reason, even though they wanted to destroy the Earth.
Mm.
GoBusters is a really confusing show.
I mean, that was the feeling I got, and I'm not necessarily thinking that's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing
if they do it right this time.
Exactly, as long as they have a credible reason for doing so. Because that's the other thing, is we don't really have the Romuda don't really have a mission as yet. They just seem to want to hurt people for like. But they're revealing that slowly, or they seem to be, and it's okay. At least you kind of have some faith that there's a plan somewhere.
Yeah, like, again, I want to believe, and I want to believe kind of with the fact that we got them all kind of running into, we've got these clues, let's all go do our various things to solve the crime. I'm really hoping that they'll kind of slowly bring everyone onto Team Drive and kind of flesh them all out more, because that would be great.
Yeah. Because that was the other thing I thought in watching it, was like the kind of the police element is really underplayed in these two episodes. I thought,
like, no, you're not wrong.
Like there's not, but then I kind of kept getting, especially the bit where Shinosuke's handed the blister pack, and then he goes into that kind of like mind palace thing. I kept getting like Sherlock flashbacks, and I was like,
That was really weird, and I didn't know how to feel about that.
Because
that feels like it should be in an entirely different show.
Yeah, it was definitely very tonally odd, and I think that's one of the other reasons I'm having trouble kind of deciding on what tone this show has, because it's kind of. It's like someone's watched a lot of kind of cop dramas and kind of pulled in lots of different parts and kind of gone, you know. But then there's not a cast of characters you feel are like family that are kind of holding the whole thing together.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's going to be the show's undoing. I don't want to like, you know, cast like aspersions at episode two, because that's very fair, but. But still, like, I do have a great fear that that's going to be the problem.
Yeah, if anything is going to bring this show down, it's going to be our B cast.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, we've had Otto being in the slowdown twice now, and this time, like, there were other people witnessing him in the slowdown while it's happening, being like, "Look at the thing that's happening," and him still trying to deny it. And I really need more out of him than that, because that's getting really old really fast.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the best they could do would be an episode explaining why he's... You know, what psychological purpose it serves for him to double down on denial of this thing that is clearly happening, but I don't know that I'd actually care to watch that episode, because it's a silly thing. It's a silly thing for a character in this world to have going for them.
Yeah, I mean, he's very much kind of against the whole supernatural aspect, and this was an angle I thought they were going to go through with Rinko in Wizard, was the skeptic. But they didn't with her, and I thought it was because, well, it's really impossible to deny this when the first episode is, it happened to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now they're doing that with him anyway.
The cast just seems as a very, very odd choice of people to bring together and not really give any focus to, but I wonder if perhaps the first 10 episodes are going to be those kind of focus episodes. But then Kamen Rider doesn't really do that very well, because you have one character who's powerful and has to save them, unless they're going to be really brave and kind of go down ones where
Forze did
hardly
it.
In it.
Yeah, Forze did it. Exactly, yeah, Forze exactly. did it, and Forze did it well, and he worked on Forze. So again, I want to have the faith there.
Mm. But even then, like, the characters are kind of... I knew all their names by the end of episode 2. I think that says a lot about kind of character writing in Forze. And, like, and even though, and like, especially because of the way that the title sequence is set up, you know they're kind of going to be in this team, and you can already see, like, the start of that, kind of the drawing together in episode 1. And yep. I think that's, like, kind of sadly missing because as you say, like, a lot of the B-team cast, apart from, is it Rina? No.
Rina.
Yeah, Rina. Apart from her, I don't care for, like, the guy, the chief guy who's, like, obsessed with, like, fortune telling and stuff. I'm like,
ugh,
why?
Yeah.
What's the point of this? And then, like, and the guy who's supposed to be, like, an instant, like, a, is he supposed to be a computer program or something like
that? Yeah, he's like their network guy, which made no sense to me until I was told that the villains, like, came from the internet. And I'm like, okay, that gives him something to do on Team Drive.
I guess so, but there's not,
and
like,
now he's not.
But, like, I want him in the drive cave, like, messing with the shift cars and being like, oh, if I tune this up and make this faster, then you get this new ability. Like, I want him doing that, or I want Shinosuke doing that, or something. It's just, these guys just don't seem to have anything to, they don't seem to even have anything to do. And maybe I'm being unfair, because, you know, we've only seen in about an hour of this show. So let's, but that's a decent amount of time. You know?
I mean, again, it worries me on the level of Shun. And the waste that was a potentially really great character that they didn't use. And it's not even that they didn't use him properly, they just didn't use him.
Oh.
He became the butt of the joke.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's like, there's a reason, you know, people in fiction classes, in screenwriting classes, in whatever class about this thing you will talk about the rule of character, you know, economy of character. If we don't know what these, how many people are in that room?
Four? Five?
Five, yeah.
Five? Yeah. If we don't know what each of them does and what each of them brings to the plate in episode, you know, by episode 2, why are they in the first 2 episodes? Mm. Because they don't matter. You could cut most of them out. Heck, like, I like Rina. I'm getting, you know, again, I'm getting some really strong Osawa vibes, and I'm all about seeing some more Osawa, but... like, except for her, none of them do anything.
Yeah.
And even she doesn't do a whole lot that you couldn't just hand-wave away with, oh, and here's some slowdown-detecting junk we whipped up at the home office. Look at it. Like, you could write her out entirely, and it would take all of a line of dialogue to replace her. Like, that's...
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing them fill out the cast, because I think that seems like a thing they tend to do. I just don't want them to end up like Santa-san in Double.
Yeah, and again, like, I thought back to Team Informant in Double, and I'm like, I don't, like, none of them ever meant anything to me.
Yeah.
And it was disappointing, and most of what I hear about Team Informant is Queen and Elizabeth because they're from AKB. And that's the only reason anyone cared about them. So, I mean, I'm hoping he does better this time around, but I'm worried.
Yeah. But, you know, that's... But I think fair.
I was going to say, but I definitely think there's... I don't think this isn't yet on the downward trajectory that we've been experiencing for the past 9 months.
No.
Oh, God.
No. Oh, Lord, no. This is still great.
Oh, yeah, totally. But, like, yeah.
We're looking...
It makes me excited to watch Kamen Rider again, and I think that says a lot. Like, I think
The disclaimer here is that we all still love this show.
Oh, heck.
Well,
yeah.
Like, I'm invested.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I would
go to love yet.
You like the show as much as you can after 2 episodes.
Yeah, I think it definitely has a lot of potential. There's a lot of ideas that could go a lot of places, and I think, you know, there's definitely, and I think this is the thing about it, is that the core of the idea is there. There's definitely something at the heart of this that is beating and really has something in it. It's just, it's whether they can tease that out over the course of time, or whether ultimately it's going to come down to you had the ball in the air and you just missed it, kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, come down to it, these first two episodes are a thesis statement.
Mm-hmm.
This says, this is what you can expect from the show going forward.
It's your abstract, isn't it? On your, your kind of view.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I have a lot of feelings about first episodes or issues or arcs acting as that thesis statement or abstract or however you want to put it. I want everything that I need to know about the show in those first two episodes. And I feel like, you know, as far as plot and theme go, I've got that in these.
I think since I'm a firm proponent of the 3-episode rule, I will reserve judgment until the start of next week. But
which I think is fair, because that's what made Kabuto work.
Yeah, and I think I'm gonna, and but I'm not. It's definitely not a series that I'm kind of like, oh, it has to perform in a 3rd episode. I think this is definitely one I'll give a little bit more time to. But it's, you know, there's a lot of, and as I say, there's a lot of good ideas and a lot of a kind of. And a core of things that I think could work really well, but like there's these, you can already start seeing the red flags potentially, and it's just sort of
I want to believe that that all of these red flags I'm bringing up is because I'm so jaded
really
from Gaim.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like I'm so jaded from Gaim. I'm so jaded from like kind of the flaws in Wizard, from kind of the last stumbling blocks in Forze, from my character issues with AG and O's. I really want to believe that I've seen all of the problems and I see where they could come from, but that they aren't necessarily going to happen.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what I'm coming off of. I think it's like, Not hypercriticality, but almost just this kind of incredibly cautious air of like, because I think that was the problem in the first couple of episodes of Gaim, was I got so invested, and then you have to try and back out of that as you go kind of as it went on, because you were like, oh, I can't even, oh no, back, and you know, and I think there is that kind of cautious air in me as I watch these episodes. I'm like, yeah, come on, but
with Gaim in the first two episodes. I remember I wasn't feeling it, and that was a really weird experience for me, because at that point I'd watched a lot of other Kamen Rider, both back early Heisei, post-decade Heisei, kind of mid-Heisei, and within the first two episodes, I think aside from Kabuto, because I really, really hated Zect, and Zect almost broke that show for me.
No, right with you.
But every other show, within the first two episodes, I'm like, okay, I've got a lot of questions, but I'm on board.
Yeah.
I see, I'm into what you're selling me.
Yeah.
Gaim, I was really invested in a lot of what I had been told the show was about, and then I watched the first two episodes, and I'm like, I'll keep trying, but I'm really not feeling it, and then apparently everything I was promised was lies.
Yeah, I think we all kind of felt that. I mean, it's been interesting recently, because I've started watching for the first time Ryuki with subvents, new subs for it. So like I'm watching it at the really slow pace of like an episode every 2 weeks. So you know, it's not a slow start, but to bring you into the kind of the story overall is a bit slower.
Yeah, Ryuki does take a little while to get its wheels under it, to get kind of the whole world going.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it, and the rate I'm watching it, I don't necessarily mind, but I don't think I'm expecting great things from it overall. So maybe
Ryuki has a weird episode pacing for a rider show, though.
Oh, fair enough. That was
a thing that I noticed while watching Ryuki, is that there's actually not a whole lot of Kamen Ridering. That kind of gets shoved into the last sort of 5 minutes of the episode, and the rest of the episode is kind of spent on characters and on kind of all of these different relationships, especially once you get more of the cast into it.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, as I say, I'm enjoying it. It's definitely not one I want to stop watching. In fact, I've got episode 4 ready to watch, and I'm just needing some like free time from work to get sit down and actually watch it. But like, I wonder if Drive might perhaps be similar, because to me it kind of feels like it knows where it wants to go, but it's kind of meandering left and right, trying to get on the track. And I wonder if there's going to be some event that's going to kind of anchor it into a path that might kind of drive it forward into a tone or something like that. That's kind of, you know,
possibly we may be building to something. And again, Kind of the whole idea of Kamen Rider being a thing that exists in this universe that he can be compared to. I don't know why that feels more important this time than it did when it was brought up in Forze.
Well, in Forze, it was kind of tacked on as like a kind of, oh, it's an anniversary year, so let's put in some random references.
It was just kind of Tomoko knowing, like, the urban legend of Kamen Rider, and that's what you seem to be, so that's what we're going to call you.
Yeah.
Whereas here it was, was it 29
person.
Who was like, are you a Kamen Rider? And he's like, what's that? And then brings it up to Kiriko.
I think the thing is it was even more than that, where he said it was are you Kamen Rider? It wasn't a Kamen. It was the definite in that sense, which I'm guessing kind of links back to the fact that we saw somebody who was Drive in the backstory.
Yeah,
yes.
But Kiriko's reaction to him asking her about that felt very, very significant to me, kind of in the mold of he keeps bringing up that he hasn't seen her smile, and then that's what the mention of not only Kamen Rider in general, but the fact that it's him kind of evoked actual emotion in her.
Yes.
And that felt very, very significant, and I'm kind of wondering what that means. And kind of if we're back in the semi-interconnected double-through wizard timeline where Kamen Rider is a thing that certain people may almost know about, and if it's something that maybe Mr. Belt is kind of pushing them into.
Yeah, I do wonder where they're going to go with that. I don't know how I feel about that kind of continuity being the way it is, because I don't know. I like that you can kind of make it up for yourself, but
yes.
But if they want to go down that route and they handle it well, I don't mind. I mean, I'm happy to put loads of ideas on screen and see if they work. I think with a competent writer, it could work really well. But I mean, I think it kind of depends when it becomes self-indulgent. That's the measure.
Yeah.
Of it, I think.
I mean, yeah. I think it could work because again, Sanjo started it.
Mm.
He like. The double through wizard kind of vaguely interconnected world was something he started. So I think if he had some kind of idea there, because the whole reason that it didn't continue directly was that Kobayashi wanted to do her own thing with Oz and didn't want to use Foundation X. Whereas when we had Sanjo back on staff in Forze, he brought Foundation X back into the fold kind of in this vague way. That didn't really affect Forze, but kind of made it clear that we were still kind of in the same kind of line. And I think if he could do something like that again and really pull it off, where he's trying to kind of create another, I don't even know if I want to say Showa-esque kind of legacy of writers. But I think, like, since it was his initial idea, if it's something that's going to be pulled off, it could be. I'm just really curious to see why Kiriko reacted that way. I want to know so many things about her and where she's going.
Yeah,
I care more about that than most things right now.
Well, I think considering the appalling treatment of previous female characters last year, I think we can all be forgiven for wanting a lot more for Kiriko in general.
Well, and it's also like, you know, she's actually got a good dramatic hook up front. I mean, I talked earlier about not being entirely convinced by Shinosuke's the level of his reaction to what's going on, even as I agree that it is a perfectly realistic thing. It's an aesthetic choice there, not a judgment choice. But she's actually got a good thing. Here is a thing she wants to do. She can't do it. That is a fascinating thing to discuss and explore.
Mm.
I mean, especially since, and the reason I brought up the all right, well, what is the basis of the numbered monsters selection of people? Like, you know, my big wonder, is there some sort of there's no way, I don't have the language to say it without being really kind of ableist and horrible, but is there something, quote, end quote, wrong with her? Is there a quote-unquote imperfection in her that is keeping her from being Kamen Rider in the same way that
I really hope he questions that. Because, again, bringing that back to he's concerned about Mr. Belt coming from sort of the same angle as the number guys, whereas he's already figured out they're passing over people with certain quote-unquote imperfections, which are as minor as allergies, apparently.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's seeing that that's in the monster, and if we come to that being there's some kind of quote-unquote imperfection with her being unable to be Drive, I really hope that's something they keep questioning.
Yeah, because I like this. The one thing I will say I like about Shinosuke, without reservation, is that he is questioning everyone's premises, and why are you doing this? Why do you do the things you do, and why are you doing it in this way?
And
that's going to be fun.
That's going to be fun. That's great. That's a really important thing for him to be doing on a lot of levels. Again, bringing back to why Kiriko isn't Drive and why he feels that she should be. And, I feel it's really a really big thing to note in kind of everyone calling for Lady... Again, people calling for Kiriko to be a rider... Because that's a lot of things that I'm hearing, and I am pretty on board with it. I'd love to see it.
Oh,
is
yeah,
that
heartbeat.
Is that our writer wants her to be the writer?
Mm.
And I just don't want her to end up being the superior woman who helps the man realize that he is even more superior to her.
Yeah,
it happens too often.
It does. It happens too often in Kamen Rider.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot about Double today and about how I'm really angry that that Akiko, Wakana, and Seiko are not Kamen Riders.
Oh.
That Wakana and Seiko were not Double, that Shroud was not the one that used the Lost Driver, that Shotaro is a Kamen Rider in Narumi's place instead of Narumi's own daughter.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, I actually, like, basically rewrote Double today, and I'm really disappointed
that
my show is not the one that happened.
To go in on that vein, may I ask you what is, you know, very, very, like, you know, male privilege sort of question? Because
it's
been a thing that's been on my mind. Is it more frustrating? Because the thing that I've been thinking while watching, like, Kiva compared to Gaim is... In Kiva, they keep on begging the question, well, why can't this lady be a writer? Nonsense answer. All right, well, we'll solve that. Can she be a writer now? No. Other nonsense answer. All right, can she be a writer now? No. And it's like, is it more frustrating for them to constantly be saying, oh, she should be a writer, ... but she's not? Or is it more frustrating for them just not even bring it up, like with... Like, that's my big problem with Denno. Like, I like Hana. I like Kohana.
I don't think Hana could have ever been Denno with Hana's character. Hana would never have allowed... Denno runs on being with the Imogen, and Hana would never, ever have allowed that.
Well, she still could have been the blank form of
which has no power. It's basically White Kuga.
It's true, but it's still something.
It's still something, but I don't think Hana as a character could have been Denno, where literally if you were to just take Double as it is,
yes,
take Shotaro out, put Akiko in that spot, literally nothing would be different.
Yeah, no, exactly. But it's one of those things where, you know, and I know this is a personal subjective opinion, and this is going to be a different answer for everyone. Which one's more frustrating? Because, like, I know
I get more
frustrated when they tease it at me. Because if they just don't do anything, and they just don't think about it, and they don't care, I personally am like, oh, well, they're just not thinking and not caring. But when they tease it, it's like, oh, it's so close, but they're never going to give it to me.
In Kiva, I kept filled... It didn't bother me when they were doing it in Kiva. It bothers me now. Post-Kiva, it didn't bother me when they were doing it in Kiva, because I felt that's what... I thought, I wanted to believe, that's what they were building towards. It's, why can't she be Ixa? With this stupid reason. And yeah. I kept feeling like we're going to get there. We're going to get there, and then we really didn't in any meaningful way.
We did, and then it stopped. That's it. But we've got the rest of the show. That's it. Like,
and like
frustrating.
That frustrated me, but I think on a narrative level, I think it frustrates me more with, you could literally do the exact same show putting with no Shotaro and just having Akiko be that same role. Because they're essentially the same character, except one is male and one is female.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it would, the kind of the themes in Double would mean so much more if it was Philip and Akiko. Mm. Or, again, in this horrible rewrite of Double that I'm disappointed didn't happen, in which it was always Shroud went for Begin's Night, went with the girls, or went with Narmi. Shroud was the Kamen Rider. It all got screwed up. She gave the girls the double belt. Go save your brother. And then that's not working because the two of them can't get along. Double can't sync properly. Okay, I'm bringing my dead partner's daughter in. You go save him. And I feel like that would have been such a much better show, except it's all focused around girls and they're not going to do that in Kamen Rider.
Which is frustrating.
Yes. I mean, I get from the standpoint of marketing a TV show, I understand what they're doing. I don't I don't like it. I don't agree with it. We know girls watch the show, and I think that's why we're getting more prominent female characters in recent years, even if not all of them are Kamen Riders, even if most of them are not Kamen Riders. But I do believe that's why we're getting more of these really great female characters out of, like, Miyu and Rinko and Kiriko. Mm. But, I mean, we've still had 3 years of canon female writers, and they haven't done one of them right.
No. I don't know. I mean, in response to your question, Elif, I think the teasing is more, is certainly more annoying because it just comes off as they know what people seem to want and yet don't want to do it for no reason. I don't know. I'm really hoping that we get a canon female writer in show this year.
That isn't terrible.
Yes.
See, like everyone keeps saying they want Kiriko to be a writer, and I don't know if I do. Because
I'm not saying I want Kiriko to be a writer.
I'm using that as an example because a lot of people have said like Kiriko should just be the writer, and I'm like that would be great, but please look at Nadeshiko, Mayu, and what's her face with the skirt. That's just a progressive line of getting worse.
Yeah.
And I don't want Kiriko to be the bottom point of that line.
No.
She deserves so much better than that.
And there's not a one of them that didn't.
No, I don't know, I'd like to see the dynamic if they like brought in a female police chief into the squad to shake it up and she became the writer. I don't know. Like,
that would be great. There's an actress from a police drama that I really love that I've been saying for weeks now, I want her to, like, be in an episode and make a reference to her character in that drama. And the title of the drama is Boss because she's boss of the unit.
Yeah.
Nice.
And everyone please go watch Boss. It's fantastic on so many levels. I forget who subbed it. It might have been SARS. But I would love for her, and it's something she would do because she, in Boss at the end of season one, she makes a reference to another drama a character in another drama she played in. So I really thought it would be funny if she was like a victim of the week or a monster of the week in Drive and somehow made a reference to Osawa Eriko from Boss. And if she came in as some kind of other unit's kind of leader and being like, what are you guys doing? Let's get all you guys on track. That would be really great. And I think that that would be a lot of fun and kind of a great way to bring in more female characters with kind of with a position of power, because that's not something we do in Rider all that much.
No.
And that has been my long rant on women in Kamen Rider.
It's a good rant.
No, it is indeed. Is that Amami Yuki? Is that who?
Yes, yes, yeah. Amami Yuki, yes. Who is fantastic in Boss. I've looked up some other dramas that she's in that I'd love to watch. She's a fantastic actress. I very heavily recommend Boss. In that vein, I would also recommend Koshonen, which is about a lady profiler. I can't remember the name of the lead actress. I watched it because Boken Red is in it.
Nice.
And I'll watch literally... that is how I started watching J-dramas. I started watching other things that he's in.
Well, that's
I have a huge, terrible crush on him.
J-dramas over here, because... what's his name? Odagiri.
Yes.
Joe Odagiri.
Yes.
He was in that River's Edge detective agency show not long ago with the guy who played the grandfather in Decade.
Mm.
Highly recommended.
Is that the one that he's in with Ueno Jury?
I don't know Ueno Jury. Is that the grandpa from Decade?
No. No, she's an actress that I know he was...
Well, there is... There is a lovely actress. I don't know her name.
I know he was in a drama with her very recently, and I don't know the plot or the title.
No,
she was in the. She's the woman from the Kamen Rider security system commercials.
Oh, nice!
That was Ueno Jerry.
Is it Go you're thinking of that she was in, or Tsuneoni Naren Kute?
I don't actually know the name of the drama she's in with Odagiri Joe. The only drama I know her from is Nodame Cantabile.
Oh, fair enough, yeah.
Where she's Nodame, which is also great. Everyone should watch that.
Anyway, we're getting off topic. We should probably end here before we just end up in this discussion of everything that we love.
I can and will go on recommending things forever.
Yeah.
Please watch Bokenger. Yeah. Everyone watch Bokenger.
I was going to say, thank you so much for filling my life with things that I would have so much time to do more useful things if I didn't watch, but no, I love it. Anyway, so this has been the Uncommoncast RX. So thank you everyone for listening. It's been awesome. I hope you're enjoying Drive as much as we are, despite our reservations. We're still having fun, and that's the most important thing.
Yes.
So, yes, and I do want it known that, you know, the bit at the top where I've got my issues, I really am still enjoying the show.
Definitely.
Yes,
so I hope everyone has a good time.
Clearly am loving it.
Excellent. So I hope everyone's having a great time, and we will see you next week for more discussion of Drive.
Hello, this is Amit once again coming at you to give the contact information for the show and my compatriots from this episode. You can contact the show in general at uncommoncastrx@gmail.com or on Twitter at UncommonRX. Aleph is at NeedsMoreAleph. Jonathan is at The Imposter. Sono is at Sono Your Face. And you have been listening to a production of the Toll Network, bringing you analysis with teeth. For more, visit trailofheroes.wordpress.com, where you can find and subscribe through Stitcher, iTunes, and the RSS feeder of your choice to this show, as well as to Moonspeak, wherein Sono and I discuss Sailor Moon Crystal just about every 2 weeks, or twice a month at least. And you can find that as well as a bunch of other stuff that goes up there. Little articles here and there. A lot of fun stuff. All taking a very critical eye to things, but embracing what we love and suggesting that the things that we don't like so much should be a lot better. Thank you all for listening, and please send in your input on Drive as well as any responses to anything that we might have said this episode that sparked a thought in your mind.